All right, Alexander, we need to cover what's going on in Kyrgyzstan. This is a country that we are covering for the first time. And once again, another former Soviet Union, USSR Republic, is undergoing trouble and turmoil. This is really interesting because I would say the last 3 months, we've seen Belarus. We're now seeing Armenia and Azerbaijan. We're seeing Kyrgyzstan, obviously from 2014, actually going back from 2005 all the way up to 2014, we saw Ukraine. And, it looks like we have a lot of trouble in Russia's periphery going on.
We certainly do, and the Russians are watching this event, these events in Kyrgyzstan very, very closely. And by the way, Putin has commented about them in an interview. He gave a very interesting interview to a Russian journalist in which he discussed the situation in Armenia and in the Caucasus, and he also discussed the situation in Kyrgyzstan. Now, in Kyrgyzstan is a nation in former Soviet Central Asia. It hosts a very important Russian military base. It's close to Afghanistan, and it is a very, very close ally of Russia and has been for a very, very long time. And this particular country, I should say, is also part of the Russian-led Eurasian Economic Union, and it is also part of the Russian Collective Security Treaty Organization, that is Russia's military alliance. And in this interview that I was mentioning, Putin pointed all that out. He also pointed out the extent to which Kyrgyzstan is integrated in the Russian economy. I should say it is a very poor republic, but and very dependent economically on Russia. And of course, Armenia is also a part of the Russian-led Eurasian Economic Union and of the Russian military alliance, the Collective Security Treaty Organization. And Putin was very careful to say in both cases that Russia would honor its defense treaty obligations towards both countries if they asked for that help or needed that help. So just to mention all these things, that's a pivotally important country for Russia, Kyrgyzstan, even if it's not one that attracts a great deal of attention. So what is going on? Well, at one level, this is a personal battle between two particular Kyrgyz politicians. One is Almazbek Atambayev, who was the former president of Kyrgyzstan. And the other is the current president of Kyrgyzstan, Sooronbay Jeenbekov. Now, these are people most of our viewers will not have heard of. The important thing to understand is that Atambayev, who was the previous president of Kyrgyzstan, was very close to Russia, a very, very strong friend of Putin's. And he was the person who led Kyrgyzstan into the Eurasian Economic Union and into the Collective Security Treaty Organization. His successor, Jeenbekov, was expected to be a person who would continue his policies. Jeenbekov was actually handpicked to succeed Atambayev by Atambayev himself. In practice, Jeenbekov has tried to lead Kyrgyzstan away from Russia's orbit. He's sought to realign Kyrgyzstan more closely with the United States. He has also been widely accused of engaging in widespread corruption in Kyrgyzstan. And there were recent parliamentary elections, which many people felt were rigged. He's also pressed criminal charges against Atambayev, the former president, his political patron, Putin's friend, and Atambayev, as a result, was convicted and has been held in prison. Now, what then happened was we had these elections a few days ago. The results of the elections were disputed, There were uprisings in Bishkek, which is the capital of this country. The presidential administration and the parliament building was stormed. And importantly, the protesters managed to spring Atambayev from prison. So it is looking increasingly as if Jeenbekov is losing this power struggle. Atambayev is coming back. And Atambayev, as I said, is Russia's friend.
Would this be considered a coup or like kind of a counter coup?
It looks more like a counter coup in the sense that Atambayev has been the dominant figure in Kyrgyz politics for a very long time, since at least 2011 when he became president. Jeenbekov, as I said, was trying to shift Kyrgyzstan away from the sort of policy lines that Atambayev established. Jeenbekov became president in 2017, so he hasn't been president for that long. And the result is massive opposition to Jeenbekov from within Kyrgyzstan and a power struggle, which it looks as if Atambayev is going to win. Now, I should say that with Kyrgyzstan, which is a very poor country, there are also important clan rivalries. There are people from different parts of Kyrgyzstan who adhere to different sort of views. And this is also partly what has been driving these protests. But ultimately, I think this is a power struggle. Atambayev looks like he's winning. You could call it a counter coup, if you like. Jeenbekov seems on his way out. It looks like Moscow's man is winning. Washington's man, in this particular case, is losing.
Has this does this have more to do with China and One Belt, One Road than it may have to do with Russia? In other words, what is the U.S. Looking for in Kyrgyzstan? What's their angle in Kyrgyzstan? Yeah. I mean, Ukraine, I can understand it.
Yeah.
The EU and Belarus, I can understand it. Mm. NATO in Ukraine, I can understand it. Kyrgyzstan, yeah. The only thing that comes to mind for me right now at the moment, and maybe I'm wrong, is China's, you know, domination of Eurasia. I mean, not so much Russia's domination of Eurasia, more China's domination of Eurasia.
Absolutely. And that is, I'm sure, what is ultimately driving this. I mean, all of these countries that I mentioned, Kyrgyzstan, the other states of Central Asia, Uzbekistan which is also now shifting towards closer connection to Russia. All of these countries, politically and militarily, they are within Russia's orbit. But the Chinese are very, very heavily present in all of them. There's a kind of tacit agreement between the Russians and the Chinese that the Russians will run the politics and the military side of things. The Chinese will build their Belt and Road project through it and will penetrate it economically. The United States is concerned about that. Under the president who preceded Atambayev, they actually had a military base in Kyrgyzstan. The US had a military base in Uzbekistan and a military base in Kyrgyzstan. The Russians and the Chinese weren't happy, and they eventually managed to push the US out. But the US obviously wants to come back in because the US has a concern, which is to, at the moment, try to contain Chinese influence. So I'm sure this is the ultimate driver behind all of this. And it is what I think is driving US interest in Kyrgyzstan and in other places in Central Asia.
Yeah. I mean, wasn't it Brzezinski that said he who controls Eurasia controls the world or controls
Europe? Absolutely. He did. He was actually quoting a British geopolitician called Mackinder, who actually said that before the First World War. But, you know, Brzezinski, who was very interested in geopolitics, said exactly the same. He said he who controls the world island, by which he means Eurasia, controls ultimately the whole world. So that is the great game that Dzerzhinsky and the neocons have committed the United States to. I have to say, I think this is completely misguided. I think this is politics of the, you know, the pre-First World War era. I cannot imagine why the United States needs to, you know, concern itself with which of, you know, which of two Kyrgyz politicians runs Kyrgyzstan. I mean, why would they prefer someone like Jeenbekov to someone like Atambayev? I mean, I think it's crazy stuff. And I don't believe that he controls Eurasia, controls the world. If I have to say what I think, I'd say that it's the seas, it's the oceans where the real power, the real trade flows happen. And the US at the moment is overwhelmingly dominant in controlling the world's oceans. So, I mean, this is out of date, obsolete geopolitical thinking. I don't think Donald Trump, for example, has any time for it, but there are people in Washington who are still obsessed with it because in a kind of metaphorical sense, they're Dzerzhinsky's children.
All right. Well, interesting developments all around Russia's periphery. Very interesting in a very short period of time.
Absolutely. One after the other. Belarus is more important for Russia, much more important for Russia. And the Caucasus is existentially important for Russia. But the key Central Asia, less so. But obviously they're acting to, you know, preserve their influence there.
All right, Alexander Merkuris, thank you very much, guys. Please click on that subscribe button if you like this video. Also, drop us a comment down below what you think of this new story. Please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation really helps out our channel a lot. And please go to the Durant Shop and pick up some merch. We've got all kinds of great stuff. We've got all kinds of country flags, but I don't think we have Kyrgyzstan yet.
We don't have Kyrgyzstan yet, which perhaps we should do. I mean, if anybody from Kyrgyzstan is watching this program, please be assured we will come to your country. But of course, we've got flags of lots of other countries. We've got flags of, well, this is Australia, a country that, you know, as a British person, I feel tremendous connection to. Greece, Alex has a mug with the Greek flag. So do I, by the way. We're both, after all, Greeks. I've also got Britain somewhere, which is my own, the country where I live. And let me remind our viewers again, these are the best mugs in the world. I speak as the world expert on mugs, having, you know, survived for ever since my mid-teens on, you know, vast, copious quantities of tea. I should know what mugs are, good quality mugs are. I've been through hundreds, probably thousands of them, and these unequivocally are the best. And they are the best with all these country flags on them. And can I just say, we also have flags now on many, many of our shirts, which are also the best shirts you can get, certainly the best T-shirts you can get. They come long-sleeved, they come short-sleeved, they're all 100% cotton. We have, without any question at all, the world's best polo shirts, and many of them also now come with flags. And we don't just have flags on our shirts and on our mugs, we have them on our hats also. As you can see, this one has the flag of Britain, the United Kingdom, as of course does this one. And you can probably just about see the British flag there. And you can see what a beautiful hat this is. Beautifully embroidered. You can see it also with this beautifully embroidered there with the Union Jack, the British flag, with Durand's double-headed eagle. And I should add that we have hats. We've got baseball hats, and we've got truckers' hats. We've also got hoodies, and we've also got our amazing ebooks. You can find them all in our shop. Alex is expanding the range of products in our shop all the time. And you support us by buying these great things from our shop. And at the same time, you become the owner of these great things. So come to our shop, buy these great things. Alex will tell you how.
You'll find a link to the Durant Shop in the description box down below. Alexander Merkuris, thank you very much. Till next time, everybody, take care.